We've had six police officers murdered in the last 10 days, four of them in the province of KwaZulu-Natal, and the other two here in the Western Cape. The story, which is in Eyewitness News at the moment, police sergeant and constable murdered while patrolling in Bloukhombos early yesterday morning, ambushed, and the officers were killed on the scene and robbed of their firearms. And yesterday, Becky Cele, the police minister, spoke at a Durban police officer's memorial service. This is one of the four killed in KwaZulu-Natal in the last 10 days. This particular officer was shot and killed while responding to a domestic violence incident. And Becky Cele said, and I quote, "While it is a dark time for us in the police right now, we will not be deterred by these cowardly acts. Let me remind police officers that when they go out there to enforce law and order, the law is on your side to respond decisively when confronted by criminals. Use deadly force to defend yourself." Dr. Simon Howell is a criminologist and on the line to us now. Simon, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
What are the trends with this terrible crime?
Well, I think primarily it is around firearms and acquisition thereof. You know, it's been going on for quite a while now. It also has to do with police legitimacy and the fact that the police are seen as the enemy in some communities or not seen as legitimate upholders of the law and order, and as such are legitimate targets.
It's been going on for a while. We know this, but is it a steady upward trend? Is it a kind of flat line? Are there periods where it appears to be going downwards and then we get the sort of six officer spike in 10 days that we've had recently?
Well, I mean, primarily, it's associated with the illegal trade in firearms. So if there are a short supply of illegal firearms to acquire, then we find that police murders do increase slightly around that time. It also has to do with, whether the police use force in return or whether they're likely to use force and whether they understood that they will use force by those who are trying to get the firearms from them.
Okay, I mean, that's an interesting thing, that when illegal firearms are needed and not easily for sale, the people who sell the illegal firearms say we'll get some by killing police and taking theirs.
Well, yeah, people have also engaged with the military and taken military firearms. So, that also begs a larger question about the legitimacy of the state and whether the state has the means to the monopoly on violence because it's being robbed of firearms at the same time.
Yeah, not just about the legitimacy, but the fear. I mean, criminals should be scared of law enforcement, and quite obviously
they should,
they're not.
Yeah. To listen to Baker Sale and talk about the use of force and deadly force, I mean, a lot of it has to do with proportionality and the use of force in response to a threat. But I sense that due to a lot of reasons, bad training being one of them, that response is not often the right response by police officers, which puts them in dangerous situations.
That was one of the questions I was going to ask, which you've headed into that terrain now. Is there evidence to suggest that because police are uncertain about how much force they can use when they are under attack or in dangerous situations, that it holds them back from taking actions which would perhaps otherwise have saved their lives?
Well, it's very difficult for police officers in that case or when they are under threat to decide, in that split second what to do and whether, to weigh into account whether they should now do so because they need to protect themselves or they're scared of procedural problems that come down the road. It's all right to talk about it now, but it's very difficult to do in the actual heat of the moment. That being said, there is the response they should use is proportional to the threat that they are under, and that can mean various things. I mean, again, virtual weaponry and the like. So it's not an easy decision to make, but it should be a decision that is trained for, and I sense that is where one of the key issues that is undermining responses, that and the fear of litigation and the fear of repercussions should they take or use too much force.
Yeah, so that is, it's not a, right, let me consider this 1, 2, 3, 4. It's happening in a moment. But if there is any uncertainty, then there's a real possibility that uncertainty might delay your response for that split second or half a second, which sees you losing your life.
Exactly. And that type of response is almost bodily. It's not something that you think about, and that requires deep training to respond the right way at the right time. And for me, that is key here, is that, you know, they're just not being, for the police officers are just not being trained to respond in that way at the heat of the moment, and that they're considering things and that ultimately end up, they lose their lives. But, you know, I mean, in the same token, that being said, the police do tend to use heavy-handed responses to community members and the public at large. So, you know, it's kind of, there's a problem on either side of the coin here.
Yeah, and every police officer has access to a firearm, and there, what, 160,000 police officers are there? Or where's that number come from, if I'm wrong?
How many? 160-something, yeah.
Yeah, 160,000. So, that, I mean, to train 160,000 police officers, because anybody who has a weapon is a target, and if every police officer has access to a weapon, then there are 160,000 targets, and that's quite a lot of training to do.
It is, but I mean, it is part of the basic training that you should receive as a police officer. I mean, as same as, you know, if you hold or have in your possession a firearm, you should receive basic training as to how to use it and how not to use it or when to use it, so that it, you are a safe carrier of that firearm. You know, I mean, this is fundamental basics that I think they haven't got right, that they need to, for the protection of police officers' lives themselves.
And with a problem that's been around for as long as this one has, what do we get from police management other than Becky Cleele speaking at memorial services for slain police officers and saying, don't forget that you are allowed to use deadly force when you're under attack?
Well, obviously, for me, that is a simplistic sort of interpretation of very complex situations, because it's not simply that you just respond with violent force or deadly force. It's a question of, you know, I mean, rhetoric needs to be backed up with action in this instance, and with the proper managerial decisions so as to give police officers what they need, so as that they can more likely than not respond in the right way to the right type of threat that they are facing. I mean, this also speaks to, you know, the idea of that often our police officers are only given guns, which are essentially lethal force, when in fact they should have non-lethal forms of defense that they carry with them. So, for instance, tasers, or, you know, the tasers, the shock, the shooting tasers and the like, so that they don't have to respond with their firearm, because the problem of responding with your firearm is that it's a lethal form of response.
But that's what's coming at you. The people who want to take your taser or your firearm are not coming with a taser or a shambok. They are coming with a gun and an absolute lack of concern for your life.
Sure. And in those instances, then, I mean, that type of threat requires the use of firearm. But in many instances, you know, the threat isn't severe enough that it is, that deadly force is required. And yet the only recourse they have is to use a firearm, which is a form of deadly force. So, you know, I think facilitation of training, but also facilitation of resources, so that the police have the right tools at hand, could go a long way in helping these things.
Criminologist Dr. Simon Howell, thanks for talking to us.